And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. You have tuned in to the Week 4 Expert Picks, so we will waste no time because, frankly, the slate ahead, while it has been described as being a little bit weak, and admittedly it is, we at least have some interesting lines and point spreads that are out there, games that are double-digit spreads where basically we've got to dig deep in the old fact bucket to figure out a way to side either way. Welcoming back once again, Jerry Hinnan, Tom Fornelli. Hello. Jerry, what is your sleeper matchup here in the top 25 right here? Like, what are you most interested in?
Man, within the top 25, it's a bit of a tricky decision. I think you got to go with Stanford and Arizona State, ultimately. Stanford's a team that we expect to be a national championship contender. Depending on the way you look at it, maybe they've looked like one. They handled San Jose State in, you know, relative comfort. Struggled with Army for, you know, about 2.5 quarters before really putting that game away. But Army's not a good team, but that game kicked off at, I believe, 9 a.m. Pacific time. So there's a little bit of a sort of a time zone lag there. We saw that with UCLA playing at Nebraska as well. So, you know, this is the game where we really find out, is Stanford a national championship contender or not? If they are, they should be able to handle Arizona State at home.
That game is one of two single-digit spreads in the top 25, the way that we picked them on CBSSports.com. So we will start with the other one, Michigan State at number 23, Notre Dame. The way that we picked it, the Fighting Irish were a 7.5-point favorite. All three of us on the call are siding with the Spartans. Tom, I'm going to let you lead here. What's your read on Notre Dame? To me, this seems like a real test of Notre Dame's defense, because we've seen them give up 54 points in the last two games, but Michigan State's offense isn't much. So I think if Michigan State's able to get the offense rolling, it should be a major concern for the Fighting Irish.
Yeah, I picked Michigan State, but it wasn't really like a trend I was following, you know, I was going with here. It's just more that I, like you're saying, I don't think this Notre Dame team is as good as the team was last season. And whereas I think Michigan State will make the defense look better than it's looked so far this season, I just don't have a lot of faith in the Notre Dame offense to put up enough points against this Michigan State defense to really cover that spread. So even if it's in South Bend, I still think this is going to be a low scoring game. And when I'm thinking like a 17-10 range, it's kind of hard not to take 7.5 free points.
Yeah. I don't know if I see Michigan State giving up more than 21 points. Jerry, do you have anything else that made you side with the Spartans?
Well, there's a couple of things. One thing, Notre Dame at home as a favorite is basically never the side you want to back. The Irish have been consistently terrible over the years, you know, in that particular role as the home favorite. You know, Charlie Weiss all the way through Brian Kelly. We saw it again when they kind of let a terrible Temple team hang around just enough to cover that spread week one. So that's one thing. The other, Michigan State just plays nothing but close games. 8 of their 12 games last year were decided by 7 points or less. And one of them that was not was actually the game against Notre Dame in East Lansing. But I don't think this Notre Dame team has either the defense or the offense it had a year ago. I'm expecting it to come all the way down to the wire and for the Spartans to catch the one or two breaks that they need that Notre Dame got last year. I'm not expecting them to get this year. I expect the breaks to go in their opponent's favor and the Spartans to actually win the game straight up as well as cover the 7.5.
Moving out to that first game that was mentioned, we've got Arizona State, number 23, at number 5, Stanford. This is the only matchup between top 25 teams. Another 7.5-point spread the way that we picked it. This one, to me, it seems like Wisconsin, what they were able to do defensively, almost like laid out a blueprint on what to do against Arizona State, and what Stanford brings is a lot of what Wisconsin has, except even better. You all like Stanford big time. I'm going to start back with you, Jerry. What are you thinking you will see out of David Shaw's crowd?
Well, I think we're going to see outstanding defense. We basically know that coming in. Shane Skov, all those guys. You know, it's one of the best defenses in the country. I don't think anyone's going to argue with that. Really, the only question is if the Stanford offense can score enough to cover a spread that's, you know, still decently wide, 7.5 points, the way we picked it. Kevin Hogan has been solid, not spectacular so far. You know, the offensive line has kind of done its thing, but we haven't really seen the Cardinal skill position players sort of light it up the way you might expect them to. You know, so maybe this is the week Tyler Gaffney really gets going. You know, like I said, they've just been more kind of solid than spectacular. But this game is at home. Arizona State's defense is not one I think you can really rely on. Gave up some very long drives and very big, big plays to Wisconsin. And, you know, if Kevin Hogan isn't necessarily a world beater at quarterback, he's still far, far better than Joel Stavi is. So I'm expecting the Cardinal to really do some serious damage on offense, get that running game going. And then, you know, if not completely shut down Taylor Kelly and the Arizona State offense, definitely throw enough kind of hurdles in their way that they can end up covering the 7.5.
Tom, do you think that Arizona State, let's say, do you have them scoring 14 points in this game?
Yeah, but I don't think that'll be, I still don't think that's good enough to cover. I think they get to the 20s and still be in trouble because, as we mentioned, you know, Stanford and Wisconsin offensively, besides they're both good on defense, but offensively they're pretty similar too. I mean, they don't run the exact same style of offense, but they're both, you know, two tight ends run the ball. And Arizona State last week allowed 7 yards of play on defense and allowed 7.2 yards per rush. And I see Stanford being able to have the same kind of success running the ball that Wisconsin did, which would keep the Arizona State offense off the field, which, you know, is generally been Stanford's game plan for the last few years. It's worked very well for them. So I don't think Arizona State's going to get blown out, but I don't see them coming within 10 either.
One other factor to consider here, Chip. Arizona State went 1-3 as an away dog last year, and were 1-4 against the spread as a dog anywhere. So they, you know, it's still very early in Todd Graham's tenure, but the signs we've seen so far aren't necessarily encouraging to think that they can go on a road against a national championship contender and necessarily keep it competitive.
Yeah, I was the only one of the CBSSports.com experts to pick the Sun Devils to cover the spread, and I think that it's because almost what you sort of alluded to, Jerry, Stanford really hasn't played a clean game yet this season. They haven't really had their best game, and I think David Shaw has said as much after San Jose State and Army. He sort of seems satisfied, obviously, with the win. But just the fact that Stanford's not quite clicking on all cylinders and the fact that the Sun Devils could potentially, like, you know, they can score pretty quickly. I've essentially got Arizona State in some kind of backdoor cover, but after listening to you two, I feel horribly about it.
Yeah, I don't think relying on a backdoor cover is ever really the best method to take.
Well, I let the anyway.
But Tom, that was my plan for Tennessee at Oregon last week. You see how well it succeeded.
Worked very well.
That's a great segue, Jerry. We are going to Tennessee at number 19, Florida. This is the SEC game of the week. The Gators, coming off a bye week after that loss to Miami, are 14.5-point favorites. Florida has not been very good against the spread, but this game elsewhere, I believe, has drifted up to 17 or so. But let's look at it the way that we picked it at 14.5, Jerry. What's your read on this game?
My read is Tennessee. If they can't score more than 14 points against Oregon's defense on the road, they're going to have a very difficult time scoring any more points than that on the road against Florida's defense. The Miami game obviously was not a well-played game for Florida by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, they did end up with around, I think, 400 yards of offense. The defense did allow those early two touchdowns, but after that, really clamped down. I think, you know, Miami went, I think, 11 possessions, basically, where they only gained about 36 yards or so, something in that ballpark frame there. I think, you know, the Gators are going to be ready for this one. They had the bye week last week. They're healthier. You know, Matt Jones has said he finally feels back to his normal self after the viral infection. I think they're due for a very, very good performance. And I don't see Tennessee, you know, they're talking about possibly changing their starting quarterback away from Justin Worley. The defense just got shredded by Oregon. The offense looks a bit lost. Unless the Gators let's say, turn the ball over five times in six plays, which you can't rule out with Jeff Driskel, unfortunately. But barring that, I think the Gators really should roll in this game.
Yeah, Florida nearly doubled Miami's yards in that game 2 weeks ago and lost due to five turnovers, and really six if you count the unconverted fourth down. But my friend Tom Fornelli... I sounded like Kevin Cork right there. Tom Fornelli, you picked Tennessee. Now, defend your pick.
Well, it's mostly post-traumatic stress from seeing that Florida offense against Miami because...
Understandable.
I made the mistake of starting to believe in that Gator offense, and then I had that belief beaten out of me during that game, and now I'm scared to believe in it again. But it's also... Under Will Muschamp in his first 2 years at Florida, the Gators are 6-9 at home against the spread, and 7-9 as a favorite against the spread. So I'm kind of playing the odds there as well. And as we mentioned, even though that Tennessee defense got gashed last week by Oregon, Oregon's slightly bit better on offense than I believe Florida is.
A touch.
Just a wee bit. And I just, with Florida's offense, even with the great defense, because even if Tennessee can only manage to get 10 or 14 points against this Gators defense, I really don't know that this Florida offense is capable of scoring the 28 it would need to cover that spread.
We are moving on to a interesting section. Obviously, we are discussing the CBSSports.com expert picks that you can find on CBSSports.com. It includes Dennis Dodd, Bruce Feldman, Jeremy Fowler, and then Tom, Jerry, and myself. And I found, as the picks were posted, that there's a little bit of tension as the three of us have picked the same but exact opposite all the senior writers. So we're going to run through games that we all agree on and try and figure out why the senior writers are going to be wrong. And we're going to begin with Auburn at LSU in Death Valley. All three of us have LSU, and the senior writers, they have all taken Auburn. The spread, the way that we picked it, was at 16.5. I'm going to start with you, Tom, quickly. What was your thinking on the LSU, and why are the senior writers wrong?
I feel like, you know, Auburn is definitely improved upon the team that we've seen the last few years, but I still don't want to put too much stock into what Auburn's done, considering the teams that they've played while looking at proof, because Washington State, Arkansas State, Mississippi State, to me, really aren't teams that are proving themselves to be very good. And meanwhile, LSU, I feel like, is flying under the radar as like a legit national title contender the way that they've played to begin the season. And sure, TCU is really the only true opponent they played, and TCU's gotten off to a rough start. But still, even taking that out of the consideration, this game is in LSU on a Saturday night in Baton Rouge, and that generally doesn't work out for the opponent. And also, the last two times that Auburn has traveled to Baton Rouge to play the Tigers, they've lost both games by an average of 28 points. So when I see a spread that's quite a bit below 28 points at only 16.5, I feel confident taking LSU.
Jerry, I wanted to ask you this, particularly when going back and looking at Auburn's schedule. I see the 24-20 win despite three turnovers. Very lucky, but, you know, impressive. I think we've seen good things from the defensive line. Do you give Gus Malzahn credit for the Arkansas State win? Because I'm almost tempted to look at that game and think that he knew the entire team, every player's tendencies, and there was, it was just going to be impossible for Arkansas State to do anything offensively against Auburn.
I don't think it hurt. Brian Harsin is running things a little bit differently than Malzahn did offensively. They ran, you know, a little bit more kind of under center, you know, had even more, I think, sort of short passes than Malzahn prefers. Malzahn prefers to either kind of, you know, throw those little swings to the wideouts or go deep. Harsin was trying some more intermediate stuff. I definitely think it helped. But I don't think you can necessarily just throw that game out either. You know, Malzahn, knowing their tendencies or not, 38-9 against a team that's beaten Troy and, you know, should be in the Sun Belt championship race, you know, is not something you want to sneeze at. Now, needing a last-second touchdown pass to defeat Mississippi State at home, that's the sort of thing maybe you could sneeze at.
Right.
You know, Nick Marshall has been a revelation as a passer. I think a lot of people were expecting him to come in and, you know, kind of maybe reenact sort of a a poor man's Pat White sort of thing, but he has been much better as a passer rather than a runner for Auburn so far, which is something of a surprise. Now, will that matter against LSU in Death Valley, as you point out, at night? I'm a little skeptical. As those three turnovers point out, Marshall could still stand to be a little bit more cautious with the ball. You know, this LSU defense is going to be orders of magnitudes greater than, you know, what he's seen so far this season. You know, Auburn, just there's not enough of a track record right now to think they can go into Baton Rouge and keep this competitive. Since 2008, when they have not had Cam Newton, they are 3-5 against the spread on the road. The last 2 years since Cam left, they're 2-7 as a double-digit underdog, 3-9 against the SEC West. There's just not a lot of trends pointing in Auburn's direction on this one.
Florida A&M will be playing Ohio State, and the senior writers have all sided with Florida A&M, a team that has just one win versus FBS opponents in program history, and that was in 1979 against Miami. Ooh. The team that is on a 12-year postseason drought is the team that the senior writers are siding with. I don't know. I've got nothing. I think that Ohio State rolls in this one and absolutely covers.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about Jerry, but I picked Ohio State because the other option was Florida A&M. And also the fact that Braxton Miller's probably going to play. Even if he doesn't, Kenny Guyton's proven to be pretty damn awesome. And also Carlos Hyde is back from his suspension this week. And, you know, they're going to want to get him some time on the field before conference play starts next week. So I think even if I think Braxton and Carlos Hyde are both going to see quite a bit of time no matter the score, just to get them back into the flow of things. And I think if that's the case, I don't think 50 points will be that hard to cover against this team.
No, I think, I mean, it's all about how long Ohio State leaves their foot on the gas pedal. That's the sole reason you would bet this one way or the other. But when it comes to that, you know, I think Urban Meyer probably still isn't completely thrilled that the AP voters have dropped Ohio State twice after victories. The first week after they, you know, sort of kind of struggled with Buffalo, but then again after they blew out San Diego State. I don't think he's going to give them the option of doing that again. I think he's going to pour it on a bit there. And, you know, sort of a little bit as a, you know, a middle finger maybe in the direction of the pollster. So I'm not optimistic for Florida A&M. But again, you know, this is one of those games where it's all about, you know, how much the favorite wants to win by. They can name their score. The only question is, are they going to name it something higher than 49.5 points?
Next, we've got in Raleigh, Clemson at NC State. The Wolfpack are 14.5 point dogs, the way that we picked it. And the senior riders are all on the Wolfpack. We're all on Clemson. And the Wolfpack, in the senior riders' defense, they have covered this spread 4 out of the last 5 years. But I will contest that NC State left tackle Rob Crisp will miss the game, and that will be good for Clemson's pass rush, which actually was kind of surprising the way that they were able to affect Aaron Murray in that big win, season-opening win over Georgia. I just think that Dabo, knowing that this is a division game, this is the kind of thing where I think that this Clemson team, with their experience, they'll come in ready to roll. They're not going to be caught off guard like they have in Raleigh before.
I totally agree. You know, Dabo Swinney's record, and this is one of those just very strange things, but his record against the spread is phenomenal. He is 23-11 in ACC play. He is 13-4 against ACC teams the last 2 years. He is 8-1 on the road or in neutral settings anywhere other than Columbia against the Gamecocks. To me, that's way too strong for me to, you know, pick out NC State. You know, I know the crowd is going to be going crazy. It's a Thursday night. I like what Dave Doran is doing, but under 2 touchdowns, I'm going to need, you know, the offense with Taj Boyd and Sammy Watkins and the coach who has proven, you know, he's capable of winning these kinds of games by healthy margins.
Tom?
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I'm even wary about my pick is the fact that it's a really good ACC team on the road on a Thursday night, and we don't have to look past Florida State last year
No.
going to NC State to realize why you'd be wary. But, I mean, I think all three of us have been Clemson supporters since, you know, not only the win over LSU in the bowl game last year, but the opening win against Georgia this year, I think convinced all three of us that this team might finally be legit. And I'm not going to change my mind on that now. So I'm sticking by him to cover it.
All right, let's go off the top 25 because, like I said, we're handcuffed a little, but
we
tried.
Sure, you don't want to discuss the Miami Savannah State line?
Yeah, I'm positive that we don't want to discuss the Miami Savannah State line before we go into the home stretch. And I don't know if we'll have enough time to get to Miami Savannah State, but I asked each of you to bring one game that you really like as a non-top 25 game. Because there are several on the slate. Jerry, you first. What is your outside the top 25 spread that you really like?
I really like Utah +7 going to Provo and BYU this week. Utah, I've been very impressed with their offense. Their offense really struggled at times last year, but Travis Wilson is kind of doing a Johnny Manziel of the Wasatch, impression out there. He's been very good both running and throwing the ball. Dennis Erickson has clearly brought some much-needed innovation into that scheme.
Isn't that a funny room to imagine with Brian Johnson and Dennis Erickson? That's kind of polar opposite ends of the world.
This was the question coming into the season was, you know, how was this sort of awkward-looking marriage going to work? And so far, so good. Beating Utah State at home is, Utah State, I don't think anybody on this podcast would argue is chopped liver. That was a solid win. And really, they had one problem last week, and that's that they couldn't stop Sean Mannion and Oregon State's passing game. Well, guess what? Taysom Hill is not going to beat them by throwing the ball.
Right.
I think they allowed fewer than 50 rushing yards to Oregon State in more than 20 attempts. The Beavers averaged, less than 3 yards a carry. If they can do anything like that against this Taysom Hill and, BYU running game, it's going to be very, very difficult for the Cougars to match up. I actually like the Utes to pull off the upset on the road and, definitely cover that 7 points. Fascinating game. The Holy War. You got to tune in.
Tom, first, before you give me your pick, I'd just like to get your opinion because I do believe you'll be hanging out at the @IonCFB Twitter account during this game. So if you're listening and you want to talk about it with Tom, you can always tweet at him for Boise State and Fresno State. This is the Bulldogs by 3.5 for 3 points, depending on where you get it. Jerry mentioned at the beginning of this week, I think on Monday, we were saying, how crazy is it that this is the Broncos in a conference game as an underdog? What's your read on that game and what's your pick heading into Friday?
My read on the game is it's probably the Mountain West Championship game round one, because I have a feeling that both of them are going to be meeting again once the game does happen. And I think it's very strange. I agree with you guys to see Boise State as an underdog in a conference game, but the game's also in Fresno, so I get that. And I actually think Fresno is going to win, because from what I've seen of Boise this year, they're still a good team, but I don't think this team is quite up to the level of the Boise State teams we've seen in recent years. And I happen to think this Fresno State team actually is pretty good. So I expect Fresno State to win. I think it'll be a close game, but I'm going with the Bulldogs.
Didn't you say you had concerns with the Broncos D?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, last week Air Force pretty much ran over Boise. Washington ran over Boise, so it's the defense. That's the main concern I have with Boise State, and why I don't think the teams are as good is because that defense isn't as good as the Boise State defenses that we've seen in recent years have been. So without that I think Joe Southwick and the offense will be fine. It's just I don't know if Boise State can stop anybody anymore.
Okay, the last time Boise State was a in-conference underdog was also at Fresno State in 2005. They were 9-point underdogs and ended up losing 27-7.
Was that Derek Carr or David Carr?
I believe it was.
So what was your non-top 25 line, Tom?
I'm going with Kansas State as a 5.5-point underdog on the road against Texas because, well, Bill Snyder's a magician when it comes to covering the spread. He's 19-9-1 the last three seasons, including this year. Kansas State has won 3 straight against Texas, although Colin Klein is gone, so that might be a bit of a factor there. But also because what's the problem we've seen with Texas the last few weeks?
Stopping read option.
Run. Yeah.
Yeah, and what's the thing that Kansas State does?
Quarterbacks that run.
Yeah, so I feel like it's not really the best time for Texas to be playing Kansas State. So I'm going to take that 5.5. I might even, you know, say take Kansas State on the money line.
Oh, did you pick them straight up? I don't have it pulled up right now.
We didn't pick this game, so I didn't.
That's right, you didn't have to.
But I think I just intimated that I would had the option been there.
All right, we're coming down the home stretch. Let's just get it down to facts that matter. Purdue at number 24, Wisconsin. Wisconsin is a 24.5-point favorite after getting jobbed by the refs in that game against Arizona State. Purdue was able to get some things going through the air against Notre Dame's secondary and give them a scare. Obviously, the Irish pulled away. This game opened at 22, and I think that's a little bit of a more appropriate number. Jerry, what's your fact that matters on Purdue and Wisconsin?
My fact that matters is, despite what they did against Notre Dame, this is still a Purdue offense that scored, 13 points against Indiana State 2 weeks ago. I don't believe they've improved enough to go into Camp Randall and score any more than 7 to 10 points. I think the Badgers roll.
Tom?
Is this really the week you want to be playing Wisconsin?
No.
After what happened in there. Yeah. So, yeah, I think Purdue, even though it's the Big Ten opener for both teams, I think Purdue also is going to suffer a bit of a letdown coming off that game against Notre Dame because they were so close and fell short. So I feel like coming off that and traveling on the road to play a very angry Wisconsin team does not work in their favor.
Michigan traveling to play UConn, and this will be the largest Rentschler Field attendance in the 10-year history is anticipated. They're bringing in extra bleachers so that even more fans can pack in there to watch this thriller. but check this one out. Outside of Notre Dame, I don't remember the last time that Michigan has played a non-conference road game. Does anybody?
No, I don't see why they would outside of Notre Dame. I mean, well, they technically went on the road to face Alabama last year, although it was a neutral site game.
Right. But anyway, so I've got UConn. Let's go to you, Jerry. What do you have?
I think Michigan is angry about that Akron game. Taylor Lewan basically said as much after the game. He was just completely embarrassed. You know, Brady Hoke and the coaching staff is not going to let that kind of stuff slide by. That was an absolutely bizarre performance last week. I don't think they're going to repeat anything like that a second week. Also, UConn is not good.
Rentschler Field attendance. All right, Tom, speak your piece.
You know what? There was another team that came into Rentschler Field earlier this year in front of a fevered UConn crowd.
Towson.
And that team was named Towson, and it beat UConn by 15 points. So I'm going with Michigan.
All right. Colorado State, Jim McElwain coming to face his former team, number one Alabama. The Crimson Tide are a 38.5-point favorite. This game is going to be, to me, all dependent on how obvious, like we said for other games, whether or not they're going to keep the pedal down in the second half. Jerry, do you have any facts that matter?
Alabama has not covered any of their four paycheck games the last 2 years in this situation, where they're just paying some, you know, underdog to come in and accept a beating. Your Western Kentuckys, your Florida Atlantics, et cetera, they haven't covered one of those games since 2011, and they're 4-8 in those situations, period, under Saban. So, anyways, I don't see why Saban is going to be interested in running up the score on his former assistant there, Jim McElwain at Colorado State.
And they got to be exhausted too, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're coming off a huge game. Colorado State is not terrible. Like, they gave Tulsa a very good game, you know, in Tulsa, handled a pretty good FCS team in Cal Poly last week. I really don't see why the spread is quite up around that 40-point mark. I really like the Rams to cover this one.
And Tom, you like the Tide.
Yeah, I do. I agree with Jerry. But I also think that coming off of last week's game, I don't think Saban's going to let this team relax this week, because that defense did play like ass. I mean, as far as Saban's going to be concerned, they got torn to bits by the Aggies. And Saban's not going to just let that fly this week. And I think that he's going to look to make a bit of, not make a statement, but I think he's going to want his players to make a bit of a statement. Although I am very concerned about, when I made the pick, I didn't even think about the McElwain connection. It's like, but since I realized, I am concerned. I don't think Saban's going to want to run up the score against a friend. So I am a bit concerned, but I did take Alabama.
And finally, we got SMU at number 10, Texas A&M. The Aggies are 28.5-point favorites. Is this going to be a letdown, or is this going to be a bounce back? All five of the six experts actually have the Aggies covering 28.5. And the thing that makes me nervous, guys, is that Bruce is the only one siding with SMU. Now, I don't know if that's because he, you know, just maybe spent some time. I know he did a feature on Mummy and June Jones early in the season or coming into the season. But does he know something that we don't? Because I see Texas A&M scoring about 50 points, and I definitely don't see SMU under Garrett Gilbert scoring enough to cover 28.5 when A&M's going to put up 50 regardless.
No, can we just be honest and say that SMU is not a good football team?
Yeah, they're not.
Yeah,
because I mean they got beat up pretty good by a Texas Tech team that also has been kept winning since then. It's kind of looked pretty suspect in certain areas, and it also just barely managed to escape at home against Montana State, and it's playing against a Texas A&M team that's coming off a loss. So I don't think the Aggies are going to be, you know, taking this. I think they're going to be looking to make a statement as well at home after the Alabama loss. So I think this one could get ugly.
It generally does when Johnny Manziel is around. This game was 45-3 a year ago in Dallas. I really don't understand why it's expected to be under 30 points in College Station when SMU is not as good as they were a year ago. And Texas A&M, certainly their offense after, you know, the early returns are that their offense is even better. I think you have to really like the Aggies here.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, that about wraps us up. We do have those other wild spreads like your Bethune-Cookman at Florida State, your Miami, Savannah State. All of that is up on CBSSports.com, but that wraps up this discussion. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Oh, no, thank you, sir.
Remember, if you subscribe to the Eye on College Football on iTunes or one of our other subscription services, you will actually get it before it's posted on CBSSports.com. So that should be some incentive to go and review, rate, and tell us how much our picks have helped you. For Tom Fornelli and Jerry Hinnan, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.